Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Regis Resources Limited quarterly results conference call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Jim Beyer, Managing Director and CEO. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Deanne. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us on the Regis Resources March 2021 quarter update. I note the quarterly was released earlier today and may, on some occasions, make reference to some of those diagrams. Well, what a quarter and a bit it's certainly been for us, certainly the bit in April. I'm very pleased to report that our key safety metric continues to improve as we saw the 12-month moving average lost time injury frequency rate continue to drop. It dropped 40% from 1.4 from 2.4 at the end of the prior quarter in December. This is a great ongoing trend, and we'll continue to focus on the leadership and the role it's providing in improving our safety and overall operations. As you're undoubtedly aware, COVID likes to rear its ugly head periodically to remind us that it's still there, and the recent community outbreak here in Western Australia did cause some minor conniptions for us on site as we had people who had been in the hotspots. But this was managed well by our protocols and our team on site, and that approach really hasn't altered over the quarter or, in fact, over the year. To date, there have been no confirmed cases of COVID-19 on the site, and the impact to operations and to the business have been controlled and well managed by the team, albeit with a marginal impact on costs. Like many, we now await details of the vaccine and how this will be implemented across business and broader society. I'd like to take this opportunity as well to acknowledge and thank the employees and contractors and all their families and all our families for continuing to support and deliver during this, what at times can be quite enduring conditions. On the production front, we made approximately 86,000 ounces of gold for the quarter, which was down slightly on the 91 from the prior quarter, giving a year to date of 258,726. Moolart was down very slightly to 22,000, down from 23 in the previous quarter, and that was principally driven by slightly lower ore tonnes milled. It was a slightly shorter quarter. At Garden Well, production was 37,000 ounces, which was down 19% on the prior quarter. Operations at Garden Well were certainly impacted by a mill pinion failure that occurred. We lost about 100 hours of lost production, along with lower feed and recoveries during the quarter. These were a result of rescheduling our pits, which gave us an increase in proportion of some metallurgically difficult ore presenting from Toohey's Well, as we got on top of that, and also we struggled with some lower ore haulage productivities due to some wet weather, which just altered the timing of the feed of good grade material to our mill. Now, the rescheduling that I mentioned earlier on is a result of the geotechnical issues that we reported in the previous quarter, just working its way through our schedules. And production from Rosemont was 26,700 ounces, well up on the 22.5 for the prior quarter. And the increased contribution from the underground is now becoming quite clear. And grades from the underground have continued to lift. The overall underground ounce contribution for the quarter was about 10% or leading into the quarter, but in March, in the month of March, the ounces represented 25%, which is around about what we expect to see in Q4. So we're very pleased to see that Rosemont underground has started to deliver on what we were looking for, particularly from the high-grade main zone, which we're now producing from. On the cost front, the Duketon cash cost before royalties increased for the quarter, $1,074, up about $50 from the December quarter, and year-to-date is $1,160 an ounce. The increase in cash costs before royalties is due to the lower production in the March quarter. That's the direct relationship. Our all-in sustaining was up slightly to 1388, with year-to-date at 1366. The increase in unit costs, again, driven by the lower productions, as I mentioned, although it is worth noting that there was a 10% reduction in all-in sustaining at Rosemont, again, off the ounces produced from underground, again, reflecting that relationship clearly between production and unit costs. Gross capital for the quarter was down to 12.3, giving a total year-to-date to 57. The spend here was primarily related to mine development at Moolart, Dogbowl, the Cooper's Pit, Rosemont Underground, and of course the new start that we're underway at Garden Well. In summary, our operations cash flow was a bit over $67 million, and then the major deductions being 33.7 on capitalised mining costs, 6.6 on exploration and feasibility, now that includes McPhillamy spend, and $5.5 million on other minor items and corporate costs. And then after that, we saw the external additional cash outflows, $16.8 million in cash dividends that we paid. That was from a declared of approximately $21 million. And we didn't pay the full amount because there were a number of shareholders that participated in the DRP and invested $3.7 million back into the business. Which, by the way, brings our total dividends paid now to over $500 million. And the other cash outflow was, of course, income tax of $19.5 million. Now, these extra outflows left us with a cash and equivalent of just over $202 million for the end of the March quarter. On the hedging front, as previously reported, the company is undertaking the program of its long-held spot deferred hedging position, and we're delivering at a rate of 20,000 ounces a quarter into its lowest priced hedges. We're now at a point where the remaining hedges are just under 338,000 ounces, and this represents less than a year's production, or 17% of our reserves at Duketon alone, 8% including McPhillamy's. So we're really cutting into that. On the guidance front, our full-year guidance remains 355 to 380,000 ounces produced at an all-in sustaining of 1230 to 1300 Aussie per ounce. Now, the company maintains its guidance and notes that the year-to-date production of approximately 259,000, the planned strong final quarter relies particularly on the continuing sustained uplift of production performance from Rosemont Underground. Other key areas that have the potential to impact pit geotech, plant performance, contractor productivity, none of which we're anticipating and always aware of, but just wanting to point out. Of course, in addition to that, the COVID impacts still sit out there. When we think we've got it under control, they do pop up and cause us potential. And certainly with the uncertainty at the moment with the recently implemented lockdown, although it looks like we're coming out of that, hopefully it stays that way. Anything tighter has the potential to cause some restrictions. I would note as well on the unit costs, as I said before, the key drivers, as we saw, are production, and hence our final all-in sustaining will hang off the production, but I'm sure you all understand that relationship. So on our value growth projects, where to begin? We announced a conditional binding agreement with IGO to acquire its 30% interest in the Tropicana Gold Project. This $903 million deal is transformational for Regis and will deliver a well-established long-life asset into our portfolio. It's a Tier 1 asset, Tier 1 province, attributable reserves of 0.8 million ounces, attributable resource of 2.3 million ounces, a history of reserve replacement, a production growth profile outlook, expected mine life of 10 plus years, and I do note that their guidance for FY21 is 380 to 430,000 ounces. I'm also pleased to note that in the last week or so, that Anglo Ashanti have waived their rights on the preemption. This $903 million cash payment is being funded through $650 million raising in equity and a $300 million syndicated loan, both underwritten by Bank of America. It goes without saying we really like this asset and see a great near-term and long-term value with great potential for further life extensions at the mine beyond its current plans. Now on the more growth organically have been delivered as well. Our group ore reserves increased by 11% from 3.6 to 4 million ounces. Now that's a 20% increase after you account for mining depletion. And this also this includes the Ben Hur reserves of the 130,000 ounces, which is a nice little pickup that we got last year. Group resources have also increased by 5% from 7.7 to 8.1. Again, 9% increase after accounting for depletion. Now this update has delivered an increased reserve life at DNO at NDSO and pushed it out for 7 years. I would draw your attention to figure two in the release. It's a very simple data set, but what it does is it plots the ounces in resource and reserves, and it also plots on top cumulative with the cumulative production. And really the intent here is to illustrate the steady growth in the gold endowment that we've got at Duketon. There's some real value generation that has gone on and continues to be delivered here. On the subject of value growth, our new Garden Well underground site establishment works well underway, and the portal's been completed. The initial decline development, we've got about 36 metres in of horizontal development commenced during the quarter. Now this feasibility study material, the mining that we're coming out there will be about 1.85 million tonnes at a grade of 3.2 for about 190,000 ounces. Once mining is established, work will certainly continue to grow this potential via drilling from the underground platform, where it'll be a lot more targeted and cost effective. I would also note that in the same way that it is at Rosemont, this mineralisation is open at depth, so we see this as just the beginning. It's a nice addition to our stable of production sources. And look, while I'm on Garden Well, I draw your attention to the, in figure six, the drilling that we're doing in the north area, just a few hundred metres north of Garden Well South underground. You can see the exploration drilling there. It's got the potential for another new underground development area. You know, some of the grades there, 7.5 metres at 2.6, a metre at 22 grams a tonne, 2.6 metres at 6 grams a tonne, 2.9 metres at 5.9 grams a tonne. I mean, this is obviously shaping up to have some great potential and a very valuable addition to our Garden Well South opportunity. At McPhillamys, the assessment phase of the DA, the development application, is hopefully heading to conclusion with DPI, the Department of Planning, Industry and Environment. We continue to work constructively with DPI in relation to the permitting for the McPhillamys project, and we remain confident that a recommendation to the IPC and subsequent determination on the project is likely in the first half of FY22. In the meantime, we're not sitting and idling. The project team is continuing to progress its detailed design phase in all areas, including mining, processing, the site infrastructure, water delivery infrastructure and power supply. As the project has continued to progress through the approvals, Regis has been updating the scope with any material changes required since the original PFS back in 2017, and I've discussed how this in the past. In summary, at McPhillamys, works are underway to ensure that in the event of a favourable decision from the IPC, we'll be ready for an FID and effectively be shovel ready as soon as practical after that. I now turn my comments to our organic growth opportunities in exploration. I've already mentioned Garden Well, so I won't dwell on that. Rosemont Underground, the deep drilling program has been testing the mineralisation continuing down plunge, and we're seeing some very encouraging and supportive data coming out there. We've also, a new target area has been confirmed, and will now form part of our underground planning in terms of additional development for drilling access and vent and scheduling and the like. We've also additional interest in recent intercepts at the very south end of this mineralisation. You can see it on figure 7. And I won't go through all of the intercepts there, but you know, we've got 8.8 metres at 3.6, 1.4 metres at 10.9 grams a tonne, and a 0.9 metre intercept at 87 grams a tonne. These are obviously in areas that we haven't as you can see from the diagram, in areas that we haven't got designs around. So this has got the potential to be another new area that's opening up. It's very interesting. And our team on site as well are identifying some other opportunities near the existing development, which we're only just starting to get our heads around. At Gloucester, we keep building, getting more information. There's a series of extremely encouraging intercepts there, a metre at 10 grams, 2 metres at 8.4 grams a tonne. We're now getting to the stage where I think the drilling program is starting to wrap up there, and now we've just got to start to pull that together and into a structure that allows us to assess it from a mineability point of view. More broadly on the exploration front, I won't go through the rest of the info that's in the release, but we continue to pursue our highest priority targets along the Risdon Well trend, and they continue to be tested. It's very enthusiastic and exciting information coming out there. And as material discoveries come forward, we'll keep you updated. So in summary, the quarter and considering April, we had very pleasing results on the safety front, but as always, there's always more to do on safety. Rosemont Underground is lifting in production, building in its contribution to our plans of growth, and are key to meeting our guidance in this final quarter. Commencement of the Underground Garden Well South project at the with its clear potential for more at depth, and also it's very exciting to see the potential underneath the northern area under the northern area of the main pit. Progress does continue and made in the formal approval process at McPhillamys. Our resource and reserves growth, we've replaced depletion and we've extended the life out to 7 years at Duketon. That's a great outcome. And finally, the announcement, of course, and the subsequent progress of the acquisition of the 30% interest in the Tier 1 Tropicana gold mine and its transformational impact for Regis. And it's been a great quarter for value growth, there's no doubt about it. All right, well look, I'll hand it back to you, Sian, and we'll open it up to any questions.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you are on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Alex Barkley from Morgan Stanley, Australia. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Hi, Jim and team. So firstly on Garden Well, those pit scheduling issues that have presented the metallurgically difficult ore, is that finished as a problem or likely to persist in the fourth quarter?
Yeah, that material actually comes from other pits to his well and a couple of other spots.
Mm.
Of some of the scheduling, we ended up with a bit more of, you have to feed material in at a certain ratio to keep it balanced. And as we went through and rescheduled, we had a higher proportion of that feed than we would normally do, and it was a little bit more tricky to manage. But the guys are on top of it now. We had to make sure we were keeping the oxygen levels up and the like. It was an issue. I don't see it as being a material issue. It was just one of a number of things that the team was dealing with there. I think there's a lot more control on that now and a much clearer understanding of how to balance that feed ratios to keep that the impacts under control.
Okay, sure. And on Rosemont Underground, what sort of split of ore would you be looking at from the main versus south zone over the next few quarters, and what does that do for grades in your fourth quarter and beyond? And just as an additional question, how is the main zone reconciled versus planned grades and recovery so far? Although, still early days though, I guess.
Yeah, look, it is very early days. I mean, we've only just, there's a lot of, it's quite interesting actually, we've done an enormous amount of diamond drilling now. You got to look at the Rosemont Underground way back when it was approved, whenever it was, nearly over 2.5 years ago now, back in mid-2018, I think it was. It was really done off RC drilling from the surface, a handful of diamond drill holes, and it was as much knowing that the gold was there, but needing to get the detail before we could do the plans. And I think as we went down, we targeted the south area first, which was the lower grades. It was a lot scratchier. But now that we're into the main zone, we've recognised that we've had to, you know, basically reschedule out and make sure we gave sufficient time for diamond drilling so that we could accurately both model and the resource and also model the ore body so that we knew much more accurately where to put the development. So there's a lot of work's been done on that now, and I think we've got an order of magnitude understanding of the ore bodies today than we did even 9 months ago. And frankly, that's been a little bit of the reason for the slower start from where we were assuming probably this time last year that Rosemont would be in its delivery. We are pleased with the results that we're getting out now against what we have been anticipating from these recent stopes that we're mining out of the main zone. And we're also, as you know, we're back drilling in the south zone and getting much more accurate information, and we're pleased with the reconciliations that we're getting there as well. Now, you know, we've only just started to scratch main zone, but we're pleased with what we've seen so far. We've really, I think we're now on our, I think we've finished our second stope coming out of main zone and about to get into the third. We had a little bit of a hiatus last week because we had to shut that part of the mine down for about 4 days while we upgraded the ventilation we needed to. It was a scheduled change, it wasn't an unplanned outage, but we're back in there producing now. So, certainly in terms of the exact tonnage split as to the split between what's coming from the main and coming from the south, it's predominantly coming from the main at the moment. We are supplementing it with south stope and development ore. I will give some more guidance on how the Rosemont Underground will contribute into next year when we give the guidance for next year, because we're just working through the details of that now as we get this updated the drilling information. But certainly for the rest of this year, the key production, high-grade production, is coming from the main zone. And, we're very heavily reliant on that continuing to perform as it did during March.
Okay. And I suppose the grade should lift up from that 3.3 March quarter. Are you able to put a number on what that might be, fourth quarter?
No, not at this point.
Okay, no problem. All right, thanks. That's all from me.
But obviously, we expect it'll be that number or north, because it was north of that.
Yep.
Because it's stepping up, you know, up until just basically March. You know, the contribution from the underground was significantly to our, you know, the whole site's production was significantly less than what it is now. So we're really starting it to basically step up and deliver on what we were wanting it to. You know, if I look at the total production, total contribution of Rosemont Underground to the ounces in the lead up, you know, through most of the year, it was probably oscillating around 10% or so. But in March, it contributed, you know, about 20-25% of the total ounces, so it's really starting to kick in and deliver what we required it to, what we were wanting it to.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Your next question comes from David Coates from Bell Potter Securities. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Jim. John, thanks very much for the call this morning. Good background there on Rosemont, so I won't touch on that again. But certainly, if you can just run us through the mechanics of the completion of the Tropicana acquisition, how we should sort of expect that to pan out, and secondly, the timing of an updated DFS on McPhillamys. You're able to give us what a time like for that's going to look like. assuming, you know, starting with hopefully approval by the final New South Wales approval.
Okay. So just on the mechanics of the Tropo acquisition, of the Tropicana acquisition, so we effectively have economic ownership of the asset on the 31st of March, or really, you know, the 1st of April. So, completion of the deal is the 31st of May. So what we're anticipating is that the leading up to completion, the contribution of the asset will be, there'll be an adjustment to the, against the purchase price for what the asset produces or delivers between, you know, the 1st of April basically and whatever, when completion date is. Once that completion date is done, you know, is actually happens, then we start accounting for the production and the costs in our actual accounts. So effectively, you know, in my speak, whatever happens, whatever that asset produces between the 1st of April and whenever we complete is deducted off the purchase price after other adjustments, you know, and there's a mechanism that's clearly in the asset sale agreement that describes that. But after we've actually paid, put our pile of cash in Peter's hot little hand.
And a nice pile of cash it is too.
Then we'll start to account for it more fully.
We'll start to see the production numbers being attributable or accruing to you guys from the June quarter.
Yeah, I mean, if the date runs as it's currently planned, then I think what that would mean is that when we come out with our June quarter results, we'll start to see, we'll have a new column that will be the contributions and the costs of Tropicana, but it'll only really be for 1 month, assuming that it's, you know, completion is on the 31st.
Yep. Okay, cool. And then a timeline from the McPhillamys approval?
Yeah. So your question was around McPhillamys and the DFS. The DA, we've worked through with DPI, and we continue to have engaging interaction with DPI. There's really probably one, the key outstanding item I think I've mentioned before has been just resolving this, the surface water licences requirements and how they're calculated and how they're allocated, and we're working our way through that. There's certainly a path that's seen. We're just working on that with DPI and with the Department of Water. Once that starts to get wrapped up and a couple of other relatively minor loose ends, then we would anticipate that DPI would then make their recommendation, and we understand that, you know, they like to ensure that before they make a recommendation to IPC that I's are dotted and T's are crossed, and I think that's important because I'd rather take a little more time and know that everything's squared off rather than being fast and find out that, you know, there was a gap somewhere that causes everything to, the wheels to fall off and have to, you know, reset our clock. But once we've got DPI's recommendation, which will come with a series of conditions, there'll be two things then. That then gets referred to the IPC for their decision-making process, and that, you know, that could be, we know that they've got 12 weeks, but they can apply for extra time on that, so, you know, that could take longer, and we have seen some projects take, a few more weeks than that. But in the meantime, once we've received, we understand what DPI is satisfied with in terms of the project, then we can finalise our DFS with the detail on the cost estimates for the plant, for the infrastructure, and which we've sort of talked about We've given high level updates. You know, there's been some pretty significant changes there, but we'll be able to sort of talk through and give a much more detailed explanation of what's in it, what's in, what's changed, where the additional costs came from, why they're there. So, you know, we're working, all our team, the engineering team now and our project team is working on the basis of being ready for a FID, a final investment decision, sometime September quarter. And, you know, that way, when and if we do get a recommendation from DPI and then subsequently from IPC, we're actually ready to pull the trigger and we're not sort of sitting around flat-footed works. You know, we're doing things at the moment, like we're out for tenders, we're talking with mining contractors at the moment and tendering that process and construction and a whole bunch of elements.
Okay, so the clock kind of starts ticking, if you like, on a updated DFS once you've got those final conditions from DPI.
Yeah, that's right.
You've already done a lot of the background work for it and, you know, you're kind of ready to act on them.
Yeah, we just, you know, we're pulling all of that. We're working on that at the moment. I mean, we could, you know, arguably we, you know, we just want to see, make sure that we understand fully what the final conditions are that DPI might put on us to ensure that we've got everything covered in the DFS. And so, you know, within weeks of that coming out, we'd be updating the market on the detail of the DFS.
Thanks very much. Look, I'll pass it on. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Dave.
Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from Al Harvey from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yeah, g'day, Jim. Just wanting to get a bit of an update on sustaining CapEx at Duketon South. So looks like it's running a little bit higher. Just wondering what the kind of go-forward rate for that might be next quarter and beyond.
Well, we'll give guidance on all-in sustaining and growth capital at you know, for the full year. We're not in a position to go into that at the moment. And I think in terms of our all-in sustaining, we also don't give a breakdown by the north and the south and the different operations. We just talk about it being across the business. But if your question, but you're specifically talking about what's happening at Duketon South, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Our all-in, the sustaining capital is built into the all-in sustaining cost number. It's actually not separated out, so I'm not quite sure how we can give you, we don't give guidance specifically on the difference between sustaining CapEx and growth CapEx. What we do is we give guidance in terms of what is all-in sustaining cost, which is both, you know, the cash cost, if you like, plus the sustaining capital. And we also give guidance on growth capital, and we give guidance on exploration and corporate as well. But so I think, you know, to give specific guidance on the sustaining CapEx is probably a little bit tricky because we don't really break it down into that level of detail. We just give it as a all-in cost, including sustaining.
No worries. Thanks, Jim.
Look, it might be, if it's worthwhile, you know, we can explain, you know, take it offline and give you explain how we, what our all-in sustaining costs are in terms of, you know, how we build that up. And, you know, we're obviously not going to go into specifics because it's not appropriate, but we can certainly give you an explanation as to what goes into that number and what doesn't go into that number. You know, we try to spell it out reasonably clearly in Table 2, but, you know, we're happy to sort of try and fill in any gaps you may have.
Great. Thanks again, Jim.
Your next question comes from Matthew Friedman from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Sure. Thanks. Morning, Jim and team. Just a few quick ones. Firstly, on the Rosemont Underground, you guys don't give, a breakdown on, separate costs or underground mining costs on a dollar per ton basis, but just wondering broadly, have these been consistent with your expectations, versus the feasibility study? And I guess, maybe referring a little bit to that previous question, are you expecting either further improvements in, dollar per ton mining costs as you get further into that ore body, or are you just expecting, costs and all the sustaining costs to improve as the grades lift from that underground zone?
Yeah, look, we're certainly, we're now just starting to get into what I would call steady state for Rosemont Underground. While you're in this build-up phase, your unit costs are sort of all over the place like a madman's breakfast, depending on, quite significantly. But I think as our, from a all-in sustaining cost per ounce basis, I would certainly expect as our production lifts, and we actually saw it. You can see it in the all-in sustaining costs for Rosemont when you compare the March quarter's all-in sustaining versus the prior quarter. As the Rosemont Underground has started to lift, the all-in sustaining cost has dropped at Rosemont, which is, pretty consistent. I mean, broadly speaking, your mining costs are generally reasonably fixed, and what really drives any of your unit costs is, two things really. What's your strip ratio and what's growth capital and how many ounces did you produce? So I would certainly anticipate as Rosemont Underground continues to run at this higher production rate that its unit costs will be, on a cost per ounce basis, will be lower than what they have been. On a unit cost per tonne, similarly now as we start to ramp up the tonnage output, I would see the unit cost per tonne doing the same thing. Although I would say we tend to watch closely what our unit cost per tonne of ore is, but that's an operational management point. What really matters is the grade. Quite frankly, I'd be happy to pay, $150 or $160 a tonne for something that's 5 gram dirt rather than, $120 a tonne for 2 gram dirt, obviously. So, and they're just sort of typical numbers, don't read any, I'm just giving them as an example. So yes, do I expect Rosemont to unit costs in terms of dollars per ounce to lower? I certainly do, as the production now starts to become more consistent and stronger from the Rosemont Underground.
Thanks for the detail there.
It
sounds like you'll get a bit of a double kicker there, though, from, dollar per tonne cost improving, given that you're working your way into the ore body and you're sort of more consistent there. And then also, obviously, the dollar per ounce benefit of higher grade. So if I'm reading that correctly.
That's right, yeah. But, I think that the beauty of high-grade underground is that, that really it's such a, you can reduce it. And we chase everything, right? I'm not suggesting we flip it with our mining rates, but if I, a reduction of 10% on the mining rate, if it's accompanied with a rate per tonne, if it's accompanied with a 20% dilution of the ore, then it's not going to give you what you really wanted. It's going to increase your cost, so you've got to be really careful about it. But yeah, certainly we're expecting the overall volumes from the underground to lift. As I said, I think we put another truck in, so we've got more trucking capacity there. We just need to, make sure that we can get the people for that, which Barminco are working on, and we continue to lift our grades as well from the main zone. So, we've got some good things working for us at the moment.
Sure, great, thanks. Couple of questions also on the reserve and resource update. Firstly, on the 25 million tonnes of that lower grade ore, clearly that material, the opportunity there is to, process that towards the back end of the life of both Duketon North and Duketon South. It's fair to say that those stockpiles are fairly spread out across the district, across the various satellite pits, etc. How do you think about, accessing those stockpiles, towards the back end of the mine life in terms of you know, maintaining those satellite pits, maintaining those roads, you know, I guess potentially deferring, you know, doing rehabilitation work, etc., in order to, you know, keep that those stockpiles as an economic option, but also the fact that, you know, clearly they're less preferential to higher grade material that's currently in the mine plan.
Yeah, look, it's the works that we've and the opportunity that came here, and I think I've mentioned in some of the past quarterlies that we've been doing this review of our northern, you know, our what happens if we increase the cutoff grade, the cutoff price assumptions, and, you know, are there opportunities to expand our pits in a high price environment? As part of the process of reviewing that, we've identified this very clear opportunity for us to stockpile these low grade material for processing later. And I think in total there's about 300,000 ounces that we'll get from these low grades. Only about a fifth of that or a sixth of that is currently on the ground, about 50,000 ounces. The rest of it's still to be mined. And it's part of our, you know, it's waste. It was material that we might have historically considered to be waste or not being too careful with where we put it. So, you know, we actually, this is a great opportunity that the team's identified. So is it spread out? It is, but, you know, we've provided for that in our costs. We have assumed, you know, as good cut-off grade management will tell you, put your high grade through now and leave your low grade for the end, which is what we've done. And effectively, there's a couple of years at the back end when you look at this. You know, it's pretty easy to look at our reserves and see. You can see the low grade stockpiles. You can figure out that they'll be left to the end because, you know, we'd prefer not. We certainly don't want to get into a situation where we're not. It gives us security that if something happens in a pit, you've always got backup feed to keep your mills full. You don't have to idle them with nothing. But what our, you know, operationally, we just want to get the high grade in first and leave the low grade for the end, and that's what we've done. What this does is it helps us as well because the interesting thing here is that there's because we're now processing 25 million tonnes of what was previously going to be considered as waste, there's now 25 million tonnes less material that needs to be rehabilitated because it just goes into a tailings dam. It's just sitting on top of what was going to be there before. And it also means that because by the time we're processing that material, the site will really have finished the bulk of its, you know, we expect to continue to roll on, but when the time comes, as with any mine site, and I, you know, previous company I was at, we had very similar low-grade stockpiles, and what we were able to do, this was in an iron ore business, while we were processing and selling those low-grade stockpiles, we were also able to use some of that money to actually fund rehabilitation. It's always a lot cheaper to do rehab when you're still there and operating rather than bringing in specialists because it's just the incremental cost of running a dozer rather than bringing in a closure specialist, which can be a lot more expensive. So there's a bunch of benefits that feed off this. You know, we like it. We've certainly factored in, you know, how far away from the mill it is, how far it's got to be trucked, you know, provisions for maintaining the roads. What we haven't factored in are some of the other hidden benefits of, well, what does this do to our closure cost estimates? Because now we can, you know, reduce our closure cost estimates as a result of being able to do incremental work rather than dedicated contractors. And we'll flow that through. You know, they're sort of right back in. Ideally, and really what our plan is that we'll continue to do what our graph does, that figure two or three, I think it is, figure two. You know, we're very confident that we're going to be able to continue to replicate history and continue to add reserves. But in the event that we can't, well, we've got a clear plan on the back end. We've got, you know, I look at this and say, instead of now sitting with a 4.5 or 5 year mine life, we've just demonstrated that we can push it out to 7. You know, we've replaced depletion, plus we've added more. So it just reflects the potential of the ground. And that low grade is sitting as a bit of a sweetener at the back end.
Yeah, sure. Understand. Thanks for the detail there. And then just finally, quickly on Ben Hur, just wondering if you can give any information on when you're expecting that pit to come into the mine plan, what the timing could be, what we might expect in terms of quantum on CapEx to develop that deposit, and also whether you're expecting further growth of that reserve as you do more drilling there.
Yeah, look, we'll give some timing on that again with the guidance. From memory, I think we may be starting to do some of the prelim work next year, but it doesn't really make we're still finalising our budgets and our schedules for next year, and with this recent one of the reasons, and people may not have picked up, but we used to issue our reserves back in historically we'd issue them in the September quarter. And what we've actually done is we've gone and issued our reserve 3 months earlier because otherwise we were doing our reserves and our budgeting all at the same time, which was a real challenge. So now that we've finished the reserves, now the team is looking to re-optimise all our long-term schedules. So I'll have a much clearer picture as to exactly when Ben Hur starts to become a consumer of setup capex, and then number two, a contributor to our production. And it's certainly not next year, it's the year after from memory, but you know, I know that there's optimisations going on, so we'll let you know once we know that, which will probably be about the time we give guidance for next year. The other question of do we expect it to be extended? Look, we've certainly got some more drilling to do there. We think there's some potential along strike. What's really interesting is that the geos identified that this thing continues at depth. So, you know, there's certainly got some early indicators of having underground potential, but, you know, you were sort of said to the team there, look, let's just chase the surface stuff first before we get too excited about the underground, because that's 2 or 3 years down the track. But it's certainly got potential, but nothing that we're sort of putting a number or hanging a hat on at the moment.
Yeah, sure, no problems. Thanks for the detailed answers, Jim.
No worries.
Your next question comes from Alexander Papano from Citi Research. Please go ahead.
Morning, Jim and team. Just following on from Matt's question, with the low-grade stockpiles for Duketon South, do you have a rough split for how much would be processed at Garden Well or Rosemont?
Oh, no, not off the top of my head. I think, for simplicity, I'd be just modelling it and saying that, you know, basically, we do tend to look at the Rosemont and Garden Well as a single unit, even though it isn't. I think the schedules basically at the moment on a reserves basis, the higher grade material tends to run out it's important to us that the low grade material is really, it's best for us if the low grade material is being treated once all other mining is finished, so that we can really hatch it into the fixed cost of the site. So, you know, the subtlety of exactly when Rosemont might start processing the low grade versus Garden Well I don't think it's material. I think you just look at the, if you're doing simple modelling, I'd be looking at the reserves, at the higher grade reserves, running that through that 7.5 million tonne capacity roughly that we've got between Rosemont and Garden Well, and then just sticking the low grade on the back of that. Don't know if that helps you or not. Fine.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Mr. Beyer for closing remarks.
Okay. Thanks, Deanne. All right, thanks everybody for joining us. I appreciate that. And as always, if you've got any follow-up questions, please give us a call. And we look forward to catching up with people for the the June quarter results. Thanks everybody for joining us and have a great day.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.